Chicago's Backroom Shakespeare Project is one of our city's iconic institutions. And every 10 years, I like to do a show with them. Gentlemen, Sam Pearson, Captain, and Gage Wallace, First Mate of the Backroom Shakespeare's Coriolanus. How are you putting this show together in the tradition of the project with serious actors, no directors, one rehearsal in a bar?
So this project, like all of them, started with a bad idea.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 19th year, number 966, Preparing for Coriolanus. Over the years, I've dedicated several podcast episodes to the antics of the Backroom Shakespeare Project, including interviews with project co-founder Samuel Taylor, who wrote the transformative volumes My Life with the Shakespeare Cult and Blueprints for a Shakespeare Cult. So I was shocked to discover that it was 10 years ago, in 2015, that I first played with the project in their Chicago Tavern production of The Merchant of Venice. Next Monday night, I'll be playing General Cominius in the Backroom Shakes production of Coriolanus, which gives me the perfect opportunity to speak with project stakeholder Gage Wallace, who's playing Menenius, and Chicago actor Sam Pearson, who's playing Coriolanus, about how they embrace Sam Taylor's bad idea and put together our production, which has its only rehearsal tonight and its only performance next Monday night, June 16th, at the Hideout Bar in Chicago. Sam Pearson started us off.
I really love this play that nobody does and nobody knows anything about. And Gage and I worked on a number of projects together last year, and we happen to be very good friends. And Gage has kind of consistently been like, you know, it's been a while since, Sam, you have captained a play. And, you know, part of captaining is you cut the play. You come up with the idea to do the play now. And then you are also in charge of kind of casting it, I suppose, for lack of a better term. When Gage was saying it's time for you to captain, I was like, well, that would be Coriolanus. And I want to play Coriolanus.
Yeah.
It's a role that I really relate to, and it's a story that I think is relevant, pertinent, and fun. And the language happens to be top-notch. It was written towards the end of Shakespeare's career. So with all of that in mind, at the beginning of the year, I finally called Gage and said, let's do it. And I got to work cutting this play. The play is an original text, 29,000 words long. I brought this thing in around 11,500. And by the time I was feeling really good about my cuts, I pitched it to our board, as it were, stakeholders of the Backroom Shakespeare Project, who are not by any means gatekeepers, but to kind of help organize this thing, which has grown very large, very fast, to the point where we now have chapters in New York, Los Angeles, Chicago. There was one in Minneapolis that I think renamed themselves and is kind of unaffiliated, but it's kind of viable. So I went to the stakeholders and got a resounding yes from them, a green light to do the project. I immediately called Gage and said, will you please be my first mate? Which in our dynamic means Gage is really in charge of everything because he's more intelligent, more organized, and more lovely than I could ever hope to be. And Gage, I'm very lucky to say, agreed. He also agreed to play the role of Menenius. When you put these together, you kind of precast some big roles in this particular story. Menenius functions as sort of an ersatz father to Coriolanus and very much kind of the moral authority of the play. And I believe the conscience of the people watching the story as well. So Gage is perfect for it. We sent out an email a couple months back saying, who wants to play? And we had a fantastic amount of submissions. Essentially, we say you can videotape yourself or write us a short email to say, I want to play, that you are available for the dates, and that you then tell us 3-1 of the roles that you would like to play and why you would be interested in playing them. From there, Gage and I have our clay. We kind of go through and try and pick out like, oh, this person clearly seems very passionate about this. We should absolutely cast them. That'll be a really fun dynamic. Sometimes you go, this will be challenging and weird and therefore worthwhile. We also try and get a balance of people who have never played with us, as well as some real, Gage likes to call them heavy hitters, folks who really understand the project and are very integral in kind of executing it in a way that is, you know, clear, concise, and fun.
Wily veterans.
Exactly.
And it really does help to have those people in the room, especially Austin. You mentioned that we had no director in one rehearsal. With that condensed amount of time, it's really helpful to have people just kind of showing the way, leading by example, not having someone say, hey, we need you to stand over here. We need you to take on this objective, this this intent for how you're going to play the character. Rather, it's more interesting to watch Austin in the rehearsal make big choices, succeed, fail, bail on an idea, connect with a scene partner on their idea. Watching someone do that teaches the newer players, hey, this is, this is actually fun. My box is much wider. I can play around so much more.
Well, it's the most amazing part of the project for me is that it is purely actor driven, which is true of so much of theater. As a director, I want actors who are coming in and bringing all the choices so I can edit, right? And so if you've got a room full of actors all going, no, I'm going to do this and this and this, and how can I help you, and helping each other, telling the story. How it must be really hard to come up, or maybe it's not. You get so many submissions of people want to play. I couldn't believe it's been 10 years since I've done it, because every time I've gotten the email from you guys, I go, God, I would love to. Oh, shoot, I'm not available on the one day of rehearsal or whatever. But this time I was available, and I knew this play had one or two older characters that I could slot myself into.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can say, and not in any false flattery, we saw your submission, and it was one of those where Sam and I were like, oh, thank God we can do the play. Like, we have someone that knows how to do this, and not because of age demographic, but because of we're lucky to have you a part of the project. Our Chicago email list that Sam mentioned, we send out that Who Wants to Play email. It goes out to over 500 people in the Chicago area. So it's a really large list. We, almost every project, end up saying no to some extraordinary actors in the city. I mean, some, you know, it feels terrible. It feels like that's the worst part of running a project, is saying no to people that maybe we were young up to. But it just doesn't always work out every time with the amount of submissions. For Coriolanus, it actually worked out really well. We did have to say no to some really wonderful people we're friends with, great actors, but it's much better to have that problem than to have, okay, we had 30 people that have never, ever played, and they all submitted for Romeo. Okay, how are we going to do this one?
Yeah. Talk about the values of the project, because the one rehearsal is a slight misnomer, because we did have a read through. Talk about the values, because we talked about them a lot. And I think that is so much of what drives the success of the project.
So when Samuel Taylor and Kelly Risto founded the project, they realized pretty early on that the no director thing only worked if there was some unified ideas, something that we could all agree on, even if we're bringing completely different concepts of how we want to play Shakespeare. So what they developed over time with the other original stakeholders were these values that help guide everyone, at least in some uniform direction, without a all-seeing, powerful voice telling us what to do.
I'm Peter Holland. I'm the McNeil Family Professor in Shakespeare Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This fall of 2025, we'll be touring all the great books abridged at various venues we'll announce soon, and the Ultimate Christmas Show abridged in Washington State at the Edmonds Center for the Arts on December 3rd, and the Capitol Theater in Yakima on December 12th. Sign up for our newsletter or check out the touring pages at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Gage Wallace and Sam Pearson, talking about the Backroom Shakespeare Project production of Coriolanus, which performs next Monday night only, June 16th, at the Hideout Bar in Chicago. Sam was talking about his favorite of the project's seven guiding principles.
My favorites will always include clarity, which I think for those of us that like to geek out with Shakespeare and do the work, I think that is truly like the mark, the watershed of excellence to me is an actor where I can understand you, even though you're using language that's 400 years old. And that also can mean, you know, clarity of intention, clarity of that scene. As you said, Austin, when you're directing, you're editing. Actors bring in kind of the raw clay. We don't have anyone to edit us. So to keep in mind as you're working on this language, clarity, and like, will people understand what I'm saying? It doesn't mean just like the expositional phrases that you say, which are very, very important because we don't have sets, we don't have costumes, we don't have music, but also just like the shape of the language itself and how you move forward through it. Another one, speaking of moving forward, velocity, which is great. And that really, you know, I've never seen a play and been like, I wish that that play was 20 minutes longer, but they said the same things. And that's certainly true with this, where you're in a bar and we have the most generous audience in the world. If you want to laugh, you have a laugh. Yeah. But I always try and remind our players, velocity is a lot about like finding laughs that serve the story, finding a pace where your language is clear, but you are moving things along, because with that rigorous cutting I did of Coriolanus, we're hoping to bring this thing in at 90 minutes. A play that probably in its original staging was, you know, well over 3 hours.
Yeah.
There is something to, I think, all these, well, I mean, we could talk forever about all these values. It's what we love so much. But I think it's also important to note that all of these are born out of like a youthful arrogance that that everything we were taught in school is bullshit, and this is actually how you do Shakespeare. And however misguided that can be, I think that youthful arrogance can be really beneficial in performing Shakespeare. A type of confidence to say, no, these words that are over 400 years old are worthy of being heard right now by us, the Chicagoans, in this bar. And I mean, what an arrogant sentiment. And yeah, I think that's kind of wonderful. So all of these, the clarity, I'm not a purist when it comes to Shakespeare. So I know in our read through for Coriolanus for this one, we came across a word that I didn't know. And some really intelligent people in the room knew the word and told me what it meant. And sometimes I'll hear that and I'll go, oh, I can communicate that. And sometimes with this particular word, I think it was like, I still don't even know how to pronounce it.
It was synod, and the people were not synod. Intelligent. We were raised Catholic.
Right. Okay. There we go. But I heard that and I went, oh, well, if I don't know it and it takes 3 minutes of really smart or Catholic people to tell me what this means, I don't want a second of our audience wasting their time on trying to figure this out. So, okay. Assembly. Great. Done. Does it scan? No. For me, in this purpose right now, it's an emotionally charged moment in the play. Let's have it be clear and with velocity move it forward, even in my irreverence with the text.
The value you didn't mention is generosity, which I think all the other values flow from generosity, which is totally. Which is maybe the positive side of arrogance. We want to share this text. We want to share this work with each other and with these audiences who, I think one of you guys was saying at the meeting, no matter what bar, what venue we're playing in around the city, the tickets are free. People have to line up because the seating is limited. And despite the lack of advertising or only the social media advertising, the word of mouth is such that there are lines around the corner for all of these productions. Clearly, the audiences are really digging what the project is bringing.
there's a big difference when an audience is played with, when they're necessary for the play to move forward. And I think all of the values that Backroom does, and Backroom when it's at its best, requires the audience. We see a lot of plays, Shakespeare plays now, where even sometimes they succeed at talking to us, but it still seems like if we weren't there, it would continue on anyway. Right. And the backroom plays, if the audience isn't there, we should go home. And so they show up because they know that they're necessary. They know that they make us be able to do beautiful things. They help us fall in love with our scene partners. They help us go to war. They help us reclaim our father's land. And we can't do those things without them. So I think that's why they keep showing up. And, you know, it's a really fun time to ground in a bar while people are being really good actors.
And I'll say too, with the audience, there's a purity to Backroom as far as like intention. Like, unfortunately, in this really hard business, most of what we do is trying to find another job, trying to make sure we're making the right connections, impress the right person. I've never been in a play that is not reviewed, that does not have important people either in the audience at times or backstage, or a director who I would love to work with again. And all of these stakes kind of build up to the point where sometimes you forget why you're doing your art because you're so focused on your career. There's a purity to the Backroom Shakespeare project where it's like the only reason to do this is the celebration of the language, of the art. And the only reason our audience is there is to listen, to hear a play.
I'll tell a story I shouldn't tell, but I will. At some project within the last while, I won't specify which one, we heard that the new artistic director of Chicago Shakes, Edward Hall, was interested in coming and seeing one of our shows. And there were an actor or two in the project that said, you know, can we reserve a seat for him? Which is, I think, a really valid request, you know, talking what Sam was saying about how much we're really just trying to get on stage, is so hard to get a job. And I said no immediately. And then I thought about it and tried to be, you know, and I still came to no, not just because I don't think any one audience member is more important than any other audience member in the Backroom project, but also I think it would devalue Edward Hall's experience to be given special treatment. There's something in Hot Dogs, the old hot dog shop, famously made Anthony Bourdain wait in line for 2 hours to get a hot dog. Mm-hmm. And it makes the hot dog taste better. I mean, when you're in the trenches with everyone else. And so I didn't want to devalue that experience. And Edward Hull came and he waited in line. He didn't know if he was going to get a seat, and he got a seat and had an incredible time.
And he had to sit in back of me. So we were chatting with him and his wife.
Oh, that's great.
I talked to Ed afterwards and he was jazzed.
Yeah, he was.
He was like, this is the kind of Shakespeare that I'm used to seeing back at home that nobody really does.
Yep.
You know, and he was jazzed by the whole experience and thought it was hilarious and fun and awesome. And to Gage's point, I don't think you get that experience if, you know, instead a bunch of nervous actors are like, we made your seat comfortable. This is my headshot. It fell out of my backpack. You know, I was like, no.
Which I love, because that's that is both arrogant and generous.
Yes, exactly.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. The Backroom Shakespeare Project production of Coriolanus is next Monday night, June 16th, 2025, at the Hideout Bar in Chicago. Doors open at 6:30, show starts at 7:30. Admission is free, but seating is limited, so you'll want to get there early. Go to backroomshakespeare.com/Chicago for more information. Then send us your favorite value via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks as always to Roman Warrior Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Katie Schubert. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to the University of Notre Dame's Peter Holland, chair of the International Shakespeare Association. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 966 2898ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
the value of doing these plays in front of these crowds, in these venues, is the answer to my question, why do we do this? Yes, it's a bad idea, but we want to do it because there is something liberating about performing in these venues, and it's a sort of keeping the muscles in shape, but also bowling night. You know, it's a combination of all of these things. Sorry, that's a statement, not a question. Is this ringing true?
You're absolutely right.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.